Hi, I'm Josh, and Night Siren deserves a sudden cut. I'm not sure that this ending makes much sense. The building was on fire. Now they're playing in the water. Night Siren.
Oh, that's lovely.
That was lovely. Yes, well played. I'm Matt and the monkey, because I just wanted to say monkey.
Thank you.
Monkey.
See, this is Charlie. This is Charlie down in Austin. What is the Feliz cumpleaños? Is that's happy birthday?
Yeah, I
So
think so.
then, what is his birthday then?
Well, just cumpleaños, yeah.
Oh, cumpleaños. Okay, so cumpleaños con Corey Feldman. He's Spain. There we go. Hey, I did a bunch of
Cumpleaños
tests.
con queso for all.
And we are celebrating our quinceañera this evening on Harsha Hot Dog. So first up, we have a short called The Mop, or, and you guys are going to love this, La Fregona.
I do
Dun,
love
dun,
that.
dun, 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 La Fregona. It's the Gypsy Kings cover, you know, it'd be fine. Mop takes place in a furniture store where a young lady and her boss have kind of a weird fetishy relationship thing happening, and the submissive is able to push it just past what the boss is comfortable with and therefore wins that particular encounter. And
That's one possibility.
I don't know. Yeah. It was like when I finished watching this, I texted the gentleman to say that short was dog shit. And I feel like I kind of stand by it. Like,
Yeah, this
it's
was
just
from
like,
Fantastic Fest a few years ago, and I remember watching
yeah.
this, and I remember watching it at the time because once I was like a big first minute of this, I'm like, this is super familiar. And I'm like thinking, I went back and look at my notes, like, oh yeah, I saw this song, bitch. Like, yeah, I did not like this.
Yeah, definitely not my. The weird thing is, like, I can get into some S&M content, you know? That's great. I was one of the only people to see Secretary in the theater when it hit, you know? But
That's a great movie.
it, I couldn't, it just didn't strike me as very pointful, which made me feel like it was probably just a fetish thing. And then it's like, eh, I don't want to watch somebody else's fetishes.
See, I didn't see it as being like someone putting their fetish on screen for gratification. I guess I'm the guy that liked this. I saw this as taking what appeared to be like the standard setup that it presents itself as at the beginning, which is like a dom sub relationship playing out at work. Seems very clearly defined that the woman who comes in carrying lunch was the sub, also probably the secretary, let's say. And the woman who comes in and complains that there's no hot sauce is the boss and the dom.
Yeah.
But as we progress along and the sub is starting to do things that the dom does not want to make her do, and then she threatens to leave until, you know, if the person does not tell her to do that, then at least to me, that is telling me, oh, maybe this has been completely the opposite the whole time. That this person who is playing the underling here that's bringing in lunch is actually the person that is the dom in this situation, and they want to be. They're doming this person by forcing them to dom them, and they've pushed them past their point of comfort.
No, that's exactly what I said.
Or because the woman maybe has an orgasm after that person leaves is actually being serviced perfectly by her sub. So it kind of lets you wonder where that power actually lies in that situation, or if it's all right down the middle consensual. And they're on the same page the whole time, and we don't get it because it's not for us. And I just thought that having like a three different readings at least made that interesting.
I don't
See,
know,
that
'cause,
was.
yeah.
Oh, go
Go
ahead.
ahead.
Oh,
Now you.
I was just gonna say, like, what you've just laid out there, I think is excellent. But I think if I'm gonna be Mr. Tight Ass about things, that like. That's all well and good, and I think there are different ways to interpret things, certainly, and I think whatever else. But ultimately, like, I have to go off of what I've been given, and there's no roadmap at the beginning or release valve of some kind or not a, not the explicit explanation, but some other framing that explains to what degree you're supposed to measure out who's doing what for who or whatever. And like, because it just, as it stands, it just comes across, at least for me anyway, I just like, it just was just, it felt very, very like kind of like unpleasant and not like without any context. You know, it's like, it made me think, as I'm just describing this, it reminded me of my dear friend Justice talking about him and his sisters watching Fargo. And like the first time their dad came downstairs, came in the living room, it's like when they're having sex with the hookers in the hotel room. And he's just like, okay. And then the second time he came out, and it's like some bit of like just graphic violence. Like, what are you watching? And it's like, there's a whole lot of other movie around this thing. It's just the two particular scenes that you came into out of context are very like, what the hell? And so like, I kind of feel like with this, we're like, I feel like it wouldn't have hurt to have 20 to 40 seconds of context to like kind of frame out what exactly the parameters are. And like, that was kind of why it left me pretty cold in that regard.
And that's, I mean, if they wanted to keep it ambiguous and open to interpretation, then I guess that's the audience you lose, right? Mm-hmm. Is the folks that want to have some firm grounding for their perspective, or at least the character's perspective. To me, it felt like this was a story that kept revealing that it had more layers to me as it went on instead of being simple. But I felt like everything I thought about it seemed like it was all on the page, so to speak. But again, that could just be what I'm bringing to the table that's making me feel like, well, yeah, it's this and this. And everybody else is going, maybe you need to have a talk with someone. So who knows?
No, like, I think there are multiple readings for it, for sure, and that many of them could be valid. I just felt like it wasn't enough of a thing. Because, like, if it is just, well, the sub is actually the Dom the whole time, like, I feel like that's an understood thing in BDSM, that the person who can immediately shut the whole thing down for any time they're uncomfortable is the one who has the power, right?
I think this was asking us for something beyond just like, because yes, that's all true, obviously, but like, this isn't just like the parachute that in any good BDSM relationship the sub always has as final say. Like, this, I think, is going separate from that and saying this isn't the sub exercising that veto. This is the sub is perhaps the person that was trying to use the parachute and being ignored, or perhaps that was part of it, was to push past that because they had a different safe word, like Snuffleupagus or whatever it was, from the other one. Like, I don't know. I felt like there were things there that all added up differently than that. But again, that's like you said, if this is all for interpretation, which I have to assume they want, you know, that's the bigger risk.
Yeah, I think regardless, for me, like, it just wasn't that interesting. For a second, you go like, oh, okay, so these two have a very interesting relationship. Like, I wonder what will go from there. And then she walks away and it just fades to black. And I went, oh, okay. So it wasn't about getting further into that relationship. It was just kind of that cat and mouse kind of thing. Yeah, I don't know, because it just really looked like the sub hides the chili sauce so that she has to be the stool to get stepped on to get the chili sauce, right?
Right, which implies this is a predetermined situation, and the cue that we're going to start the scenario is I'll throw out the hot sauce. We've put the other hot sauce up there specifically for all these choreographed moves. Otherwise, how do you know to make a chair with a cup holder?
Yeah. No, they seem to, I mean, best of luck to them, but yeah, I wouldn't. I hope they have a long and happy and healthy relationship, and I cannot recommend this one.
Yeah, I'm into it. Charlie, probably not, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just kind of one of those things. Like, I don't want to sound like such a square, but it's just like, I don't know. It's just something about the lack of context that I just don't think is very, yeah, I'm just going to say it the shitty way. I just don't think it's very fair, because like, ultimately, you know, you can only kind of go off of what you're given. And I mean, open to interpretation is all fine and good, but like, I don't know to what extent, you know, like, what something actually means, or the weight of whatever. And that just sort of leaves me like, okay, well, you know, you don't have to necessarily consider the audience when you're making a thing. You make it how you want to make it. I mean, that's, there's nothing wrong with that. But ultimately, like, that also allows the viewer to be like, yeah, jump up your own ass. Like, right. It's just kind of, and it happens sometimes with shorts. Like, there are shorts you watch and you're just sort of like, I bet you there are people that will watch this and then identify this and see this and get this, and then we're just, there's right on board. And so those could watch it like, well, that doesn't, this doesn't make any sense. That doesn't make any sense. And then it's just like, and that's fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just like this one in particular, I just sort of was like, I didn't find it particularly subversive and I didn't find it particularly interesting because I just didn't have any context. And maybe they didn't want to have context, and that's perfectly okay. It's just sort of like, I just, yeah, I don't know. I just sort of made me uneasy and kind of slightly angry.
Uneasy and slightly angry is no way to go through life.
But it's a great name for a punk band.
You
got to
be angrier than that, yeah. We are upset stomach.
Nervous bowels on drums.
I mean, that is basically Mary Jam, right?
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
What is what was the Mitch Hedberg band that he said he was like the... I can't think of it now. There's no way I'm going to remember right now. But he talked about being in a metal, like having like a... like just, and I feel like slightly irritated or I don't know, something like that. It's something... I can't remember, but he just like made the joke, kind of made that joke about like the intense metal names, and like we had this name. And
well, I mean, maybe that's where Balloon Party got it.
Yeah, and good for them.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's talk about the monkey, or you get two choices in Spanish.
The
you
monkey.
The monkey. You got either el mono or el chango, and like chango is way better.
Yeah, it is.
But half of the poor Spanish world is stuck with mono, so. I'm going to say El Chango.
Chango's a good name for a pet, too. Yeah.
This is based on a pretty weird little short story that Stephen King wrote long ago and is directed by the guy that Osgood Perkins has been keeping in a box for 20 years. And I, you know, I will never miss an opportunity to say that the films of Osgood Perkins up until now have not really been for me. And because they tend to be very pretentious and self-satisfied and not really thinking of an audience except as like a thing to annoy, I feel like deliberately, but this one, he seems to be having fun, seems to be going for action over reflection for the most part, and seems to give at least a shit about entertaining an audience. So the whole idea of this is there is this artifact that's a creepy toy monkey, and whenever you wind it up, someone around you is going to die in a kind of random way. Like, the monkey doesn't go crawling around killing people, it just kind of exudes a field of like final destination.
Yeah, that's a good way to put
it. Around it. So that really, though, this is just an excuse to string together some really gloriously gory deaths, like in a world where a golf ball hitting you in the head will make your head explode, right? So definitely over the top, and only really slows down a couple of times once it starts, and seems to be doing the, like, you know, life is precious, we could all die at any moment thing that stuff like I thought I would get there.
It's so fast,
but like the spontaneous combustion movie.
Oh, yeah.
Spontaneous, right?
Spontaneous, yeah.
It seems to be kind of hitting in that wheelhouse, but it doesn't really stop long enough to explore it. It is just, and I say this in a positive way, it is almost plotless in the way that it just kind of strings together these scenes to get us to the next thing that goes boom.
Yeah, and it's very...
It has the sensibilities of a Chuck Jones cartoon. You put it that way. Yeah. Like, this is a funny, silly movie that also happens to be just incredibly stupid gory, right?
Well, it's got the like, gleeful, like, visceral and, like, but kind of ironic murder of, like, a Tales from the Crypt, but without the, like, sing-songy lesson at the end.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, oh, this thing's just fucked. There isn't like, oh, you did this and you're bad, so therefore this bad thing will happen. It's just like, oh, yeah, shit happens and then you die and this thing makes it happen sooner. But it still gives you all the like overwrought, hilarious, crazy deaths that would normally be attached to a curse that someone had brought on themselves. Mm-hmm. Which Yeah, I this is the first time I can think of where I was sitting in a theater watching this and going, one, I think Horst Lando will love this movie, because like, two, this seems like this movie was made with the horror viewing audience of Tubi in mind. Like, this movie will destroy on streaming. Like, horror fans will watch this repeatedly because it's just that level of like fun, silly, dumb, but smartly dumb, and also understands that a lot of Stephen King stuff is also really wild in its own way. Mm-hmm. And it acknowledges those things without making fun of them in a way that we can all go, if you get that this is a Stephen King thing, they kind of hang the tiniest little lantern on it sometimes to make you like feel smart and rewarded for getting that that's a very King thing. Mm-hmm. And then you move on to some the next like big funny thing. So I felt like this worked for a general audience and had like enough little bonus features, so to speak, for King fans too. Unless, of course, this is too much of a change from the original or whatever for some people. But.
Well, and a lot of times when King gets adapted into feature length things, it's either gonna, you know, there's ones that are good, you know, obviously, and like, mm-hmm. you know, like Shawshank Redemption is great, and Green Mile is great, and a Good Marriage I really liked, and although that was a short, wasn't it?
No, it was a feature.
Like, the Mist was a good feature.
Oh, I mean the book. Thing, yeah. I mean the story. Like, if
it, oh yeah, the, probably a short.
I thought novella, it was like a yeah. novella. Yeah, but so sometimes you get these ones that are just exceptional, and then sometimes you get like Sleepwalkers and
Silver Bullet
Catcher and
Silver Bullet rules.
I know, but it's not fun. Good. It's great, yeah, but it's not good.
Yeah, it's the old Charlie thing. It's not. Yeah, it's not good at all. But it's actually great. You know, yeah. That kind of thing. But like, but with King, it's like, you know, sometimes they just, you know, these guys will get their hooks into it, and then they just are so. I say this, try not to be condescending sounding, but they just are like, oh, I'm so excited, I want to pour all this in. And they're just excited. Like, they're just legitimately, sincerely, like, excited about doing the thing. And they just put too much in the thing. Or it just gets too jammed in there. Or they forget that, like, you know, Stephen King can't, dialogue is just not the thing. And so it become very literal in the language, and then it just, you have actors trying to say nonsense Stephen King dialogue, and you have that stuff too, and that's distracting like crazy. But then like something like this, I think it would hit that happy middle of like, what is it like? I remember when Nightmare and Dreamscapes came out, the first one, the book came out, I remember reading all those ones, and then of course I read the Four Past Midnight and all and all the rest of them, and like, but that one in particular, like that one, I remember being able to feel like the feeling of like certain ones, like you could feel the like what the environment feel like, or you would kind of, there was like a, there's a tangible, like a textual almost kind of feel to some of them. And like, I think this one just got that feeling where it was like they somehow figured out how to make the space and the way it's filmed and the way it's put together. Like, it had that tactile feel that sometimes Stephen King stories have. And that's really impressive because I don't think it's easy to do it. It's easy to kind of miss the mark on that where they just sort of so that it comes like a, you know, like was it like Sleepwalkers? Like, where it's sort of like this is what it is on the page. Like, it is a description on the page. Like, yes, but it does look silly.
It is a so different silly. Medium.
Yeah, it's so silly. And so they really got that kind of, that really tangible feel to this. Also, I think, you know, I don't know, some people were saying that they thought that Theo James was like, his like accent was slipping or whatever. I'm like, no, I don't think so. I think he did a good job.
It didn't bother me at all. I don't think I noticed.
I thought he did great. And it's funny, too, because like, having seen him in like, you know, White Lotus and then The Gentleman, which everybody should goddamn watch because they're ruled. It's like you get used to him as being this like, kind of like suave sort of leading man kind of guy. And then in this thing where he's playing both ends of this bookend, and it's like, it's a very different kind of a feel to it. And I thought that was interesting, too. So I don't know. I just like, it had a lot of cool creative decisions. It's just not the, you know, the big bucket of churning nonsense that can happen with Stephen King adaptations.
I mean, you get just the idea that Oz wants us to be happy through this whole thing. Cause like that whole thing with Elijah Wood, I'm pretty sure is not anywhere near the original story. It's just like, let's bring in Elijah Wood to do that thing that he does really well, where he's the kind of just punchable modern new age guy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like he is on Yellow Jackets. He's just
so good.
he is such a psychopath in just a very cuddly way. It's like throwing him in there, like that was fantastic for sure. Just Tatiana Maslany,
she's
doing
so
her thing. And like this whole thing takes place in a world where you don't really grieve death all that much. You certainly don't spend much time doing it, where it's just like, oh, well, fuck me. Another damn, like another funeral. Oh, well, I gotta wear a jacket. And like, and then we start cracking jokes, you know?
Well, that's the thing that Chuck, you said the thing that kind of Chuck Jones thing, that that's the way a lot of it feels, which, you know, can be a little bit, you have to kind of adjust your kind of parameters. Cause like, if you're not expecting that or can kind of get into it, like it kind of be feel a little jarring, I think maybe, you know, it's like, it's a little bit of gallows. Well, not a little bit, a lot of kind of gallows humor in that. But if you can kind of get down with that part of it, it's like, oh yeah, it's a hoot.
It yeah. This is a case where I'm glad that so much of the press around this, really pushed that it's a comedy, because I guess I wouldn't have expected that going in, just based on like, okay, Stephen King stuff has humor usually, but they're rarely like fully a comedy type thing. So I was like, oh, that's just, so it'll be a different take on a story. And that just kind of, I think, left me in the right headspace to be able to just kind of have fun when it wanted me to have fun.
Yeah.
Because I've certainly seen movies that try, because there's, yeah, we've seen movies that try to do this kind of thing, and if the humor doesn't land, these are exhausting. And they take forever. Yep. But like this one for me worked. So it's like, I don't know if it helped for sure, because I saw it, I knew ahead of time to like expect something a little different and hopefully funny, but it couldn't have hurt in this case, I guess. So hopefully it still does well despite all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The only weird thing for me is like, well, for one, that kid just looks like he's 35 years old and just trapped in a kid's body. Like, he could have played 5 in the Umbrella Academy.
Right.
That is one of the most middle-aged tweens I've ever seen, that poor kid. But I really like how sharp he is and just how endlessly snarky.
He's pretty good.
He's
yeah.
super fun. I don't know. Like, I don't know how to quantify this movie. I feel like a lot of his work, it is barely a movie. It just is an entertaining one. Like I keep coming back to the Wile E. Coyote cartoon thing, where it just kind of clips along, you know, and then it's like, oh my God, we're in this building full of payphones and he's like accepting calls and he's, what is any of this? Like, okay. And like, they have the big reconciliation with the like psych out, pulling the hand back 3 times, and then they're buddies again, and then he just gets creamed by a bowling ball. This is, I guess, like I would say slight, but it's fun. I don't know, I feel like I could keep on saying that for the next 20 minutes, or I could just say that, I don't know, let me look at the letterbox. For me, it's like a 7.5 out of 10, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say that's most of my, like most of how I feel about that kind of is similar to that. I think the strong thing that this movie did was early on giving me permission to roll with stuff that maybe didn't click perfectly because it was just going to be fun. And maybe in that same way that, some of the other stuff by Perkins that we haven't dug much is just sort of, you're spending time in a situation and there's not a lot going on. They're kind of inert. And this one, there is a A to B in this, but it's a very short A to B. So mostly you are just kind of, you know, paddling around in this area that this world is giving you. And he's just sort of presenting you with different kind of hilarious, ridiculous deaths. And that's kind of enough. If you have that initial like buy-in of like, I'm just going to kind of enjoy the fun bits here and not sweat anything super dense happening. So yeah, like I had a great time with this. Like I said, I think this is going to be a great, like easy rewatch, on Tubi or whatnot eventually. So yeah, this just had some kind of old school fun, a little bit of Stephen King kind of really shining through here and there. That was fun as well. So Yeah, not a deep thinker, but sometimes that's fun too. So I'll say 8. I had a good time with this. We'll say 8 out of 10. Legally distinct from the copyrighted cymbal playing monkey by Disney, the monkeys.
Yeah, I have to also point out that Oz Perkins shows up in here as a truly hilarious, just like when we were watching, my wife's like, these guys are acting like they're out of the 70s. And I was like, they are, because this is in the 90s, and this is the 40-year-old who was like the 20-year-old orgy, like, loving dude, and now here he's, you know, 20 years later and hasn't moved on with his life at all. But it reminded me how funny of an actor he is. Like in Legally Blonde, he doesn't do much, but he's got genius comedic timing. But it's so weird to think of him behind the camera, of, you know, like, I'm the pretty thing that lives in the house, and then doing this in front of the camera. I don't know, maybe he's severed. Because Annie does the acting and his Audi does the directing.
Well, that bit where that look on his face when he's sitting with the kid on the stairs, and just that, like, the, like, duck lip derp face, like, just scuzzball thing, and it's just like, it's just really funny. And it's just like, the whatever he says doesn't even matter, because it's just like, he's looking at this big old blurred face, and it's like, oh my god, dude.
Like, well, so, you know, we're a little old, and, you know, we never wanted kids. Plus, we're swingers, so.
Just here, like, we are.
It's beautiful.
I'm not going to do a good job. Like, yeah, we just don't expect, we're not, yeah, I'm not going to do a good job. So, yeah. There you go. And so, like, yeah, there's bits like that, and there's, yeah, except you can just get down with the gallows humor. There's a lot of really enjoyable bits, like, yeah, bits and pieces there. The one thing I will say with this, that, like, and I'm going to sound like I've lost my mind, but on the one side, the trailer that they cut for this is a brilliant trailer. It was really well made, and the ticking and the whole bit, like, it was really well made. But I do think this is also, now that I've seen the thing, it's like, I do think this is one of those examples of, like, the trailer feels to me like it was some cowardly person in some office that just couldn't have the idea that less is more. And so I kind of, and part of the reason I was thinking about that was, like, the people I was seeing, like, this kind of group of younger people that was, like, in the same row as me. I was kind of observing, they're listening to them at different points, much like Hard Eyes is kind of a similar thing. I was just, like, kind of seeing what other people were, kind of other people reacting just a little bit. And it was sort of like, it kind of like, you know, they weren't like talking necessarily, but it was like, you definitely had that thing of like, oh, this is when this happens, this is when this happens. And it's kind of like, and so I feel like a less is more approach probably would have done a better thing with this trailer after having watched the thing, because it was like 95% of the gags are in the damn trailer. And so then you just start waiting for him, essentially. Yeah. And that's kind of a bummer. That's not the movie's fault. I mean, that's not, you know, it's just sort of, it just creates this weird dynamic where you're like, it kind of steals a little bit of the noise. I mean, there's a few bits here and there that weren't in the trailer. I mean, like, the fucking thing with the skydiving, you know, the We Do Wedding, that's just the lady, the bride's dress, just like hanging from ropes to the ceiling. It was like, I thought that was hilarious. I guess I would have just liked a few more little surprises like that, in that way, but, you know, they got to sell a thing, and non-creative people don't know how to be creative, so whatever. But anyway, I mean, I thought it was a lot of fun. It'd be cool to see. I'm very curious to see what the next thing that he does, if he goes back to the kind of space-filling kind of droop-and-drap kind of thing, or if he gets a little more life into how they're doing stuff. So I don't know. We'll see
how it goes. I'd be curious to see if, like, he just kind of had to shake it out and go back to being serious, or if he's like, oh, you know what, you can laugh and enjoy the things. Maybe we'll do more of that. I don't know. Who knows?
But yeah, so I mean, I had fun with this. I thought it was enjoyable. The gags are great. I thought there's just not a lot of pullback, and just, you know, if you can really enjoy just like this level of just abject, just splattery violence, that's kind of a fun thing. So yes, I'll say 7.5. I would have liked a few more surprises. Just a little bit sharper in the last, just a little bit sharper in the last act. But overall, I found it enjoyable. That thing is fucking creepy as shit to look at. You're like, no, don't look at me, monkey. Don't you look at me, monkey.
It's also bigger than I expected it to be.
That's the thing. He pulls out a box. Okay. Like, fuck, man.
That's like a Teddy Ruxpin.
Like, good God almighty.
That's too big.
Let's see. Yeah, generally, you would use smaller monkey.
Yeah.
Smaller monkey. out of 10.
Also, how much did this movie have going on that you forget that Adam Scott has a cameo at the beginning?
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
And actually, like, drop kicks the thing in the street. And
that was the best.
Yeah. Like, oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah, that made me happy.
Look at you, Adam Scott.
That dude rules.
This triumphant return to horror after Hellraiser Bloodline.
Yeah, because Krampus doesn't count.
No, Krampus is a gift to all good boys and girls. Okay, we'll take a break then, and we'll come back and talk about our other two. Guess we'll call them movies.
Yes, we will.
Back in a bit.
Okay, bye.
The next up, we have The Night Siren, or La Sirena de la Noche. And this is a movie in a very small subgenre that is just life really sucks if you're a woman in Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So pretty right on the nose.
There's this one and The Devil's Bath, which is like The Devil's Bath is several hundred years ago. Life sucks. You have shitty, shitty options. And then it's like this one is almost present day, but the town you're living in is still like a bunch of superstitious medieval peasants. So they just have cell phones now and shittier haircuts. But still, bad situation for anybody who wants to live there and happens to be a woman.
Right.
So, that established, like, this did remind me of The Devil's Bath quite a bit, because it also has this, it kind of comes on like it's going to be a movie about witches or witchcraft.
Yeah.
And it's really not. It's just that the people who live in the village are super shitty. They're like, oh, well, you seem to have some book learning. Plus, right. I heard you like other ladies. I guess you are a witch then.
Yeah, it's the I don't know, I guess like the banality of evil, right? Is that just like, oh, yeah, this is like the horror of living in this time where like nothing is safe or sacred or whatever. But that wasn't an action movie that didn't have like Hollywood lighting and stuff. It was drudgery punctuated with quick bouts of horror. Like, and this movie doesn't really punctuate with a ton of horror. This is, I had kind of, my note on this was that it really seemed like it wanted me to sort of like, just sort of steep in its mysteries and its environs and whatnot. And it's like, okay, yeah, you've built this world that I feel like is well realized, but we're really taking our time trying to find anything to say with it once you kind of get the basic point across of like life sucks and then you die and it could just be a little bit worse based on other people. But
this is,
there's a lot of inertia here. I don't know if that's this is, word of the week.
If this is a valid subgenre of horror, it's not for me. The like, it doesn't read as horror to me. Like, it's weird to me that this is on Shudder. This is just like lingering unpleasantness all the way through. And it's, you know, in a way, like a woman comes back to town who has a little bit of a dark history, but it turns out the real problem is just the townies and their insane superstitions and misogyny. And I don't know, it's like, it's unpleasant, but to me that doesn't get the horror label just for being unpleasant or like making me feel a little like off. It just doesn't, to me, that is, I don't know, just a drama that has.
This plays much more drama to me.
Yeah. Drama with a little bit of violence in it. And that, you know, having it on Shudder might color my perception of it. Just, I don't know. It was mildly unpleasant all the way through, but I just kept thinking about the girl in The Devil's Bath who had the thread horsehair through her neck.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, it could be worse, I guess.
That had like, at least for me, there's enough like unfamiliar weirdness in Devil's Bath to at least keep me intrigued. Whereas this was just, I think
it's part of the universal.
Yeah, rednecks. It's like part of its. I think thesis statement is that like this is just like this is so normal that it's like, I don't know. It's just it. The horror of the mundane, I guess, is not particularly scary. You know, it's bad and gross and uncomfortable, and that like it's not. These aren't good things it's portraying. But there's a difference between like watching a movie that's like showing you the plight of, you know, oppressed people or persons or whatnot, like that can move you emotionally and give you thoughts about like good and evil and concepts like that in the world. But like that, because you're portraying something that we might call, you know, bad or wrong or evil or whatever, it doesn't necessarily mean you're making a horror film. Like you're just kind of making a statement that, you know, valid or not, whatever that might be, is just, it's a different genre. And I feel like, yeah, the having it on Shudder maybe gives you a certain expectation. Although Shudder has certainly shown that they're willing to put stuff that is just doesn't really fit comfortably anywhere on the service, which is cool. But this never paid off in a way that would have left me feeling satisfied with the story. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess I kind of had a different experience. Not like intensely different, but I mean, I kind of had a different sort of thing where a lot of times I get the kind of the douche chills when you get something where it's like anytime anybody just starts describing something as like a dreamlike thing, I'm like, I don't want that. So, like, I don't think it's that, thank God, because there's definitely ones, like, there's a few French ones, like, I'm looking at you, Horsehead, where it's sort of, like, nothing ever, there's no tether to reality, and that just sucks, because it's sort of, like, you don't have any way to weigh out what anything kind of means, and so it's, like, you don't get any of those tethers, and so then you're like, well, if you just really just dream like things with no rules, so like, okay, fine, but I don't care for that. And like with this, it's kind of like the opposite, where it's sort of like I feel like some of the kind of the caste system of these sort of relationship groups and like the kind of the townies sort of leveled and the things and like, oh well, then you've got the kind of whispers behind the barn type of things. And what I found interesting about this one is I was expecting to have a very heavy-handed religious feel to it, but like it's not. You expect it to be there. I don't really feel like it's really leans crazy heavy on like organized religion or organized religious thinking so much as it just has to do with like I don't know, when Reggie sneezes, then we get rain on Tuesday, and it's like, so
right, just pure superstition.
Yeah. Bring him the pepper, and it's like, and it's like that's influence on like societal kind of connections and stuff. And then it just is very uneasy and uncomfortable because you have this kind of like class system of the women, and they just kind of have their own kind of life, not life, but like they have their own sort of system in a way where like, and part of their system is having to keep the fucking drooling locals at bay when they just sort of feel like enacting something. Well, it's always been their kind of a tradition that this is this. And it's like, but they don't have any choice to matter. Like they're just kind of trapped in that part of it. And then how that amplifies sort of the desperation. And then as it kind of unfolds with like the kind of like the going back to the, when they were kids and the back and the forth and this and other thing, it just kind of like, it starts to feel more desperate. At least I kind of felt like that way with kind of halfway to kind of the middle part of it towards the second half of it, where that sort of made me feel more and more and more and more uneasy and more tense and just sort of like, cause I'm like, I don't know what's actually going to occur. Like what will manifest itself? And I sort of like, or is it just kind of like these bounds of like societal pressures and like societal expectations can actually be particularly dangerous and or extinguishing. And like, how does that play against this? At least the two main leads anyway, the two female leads in this. And it's like, how does that part all work? So like all that I found, like I found all that stuff like very interesting. And so it's like, I was very kind of drawn in by all that stuff. Like I really was interested in that part of it and felt very, very tense and uneasy and very, very like, I don't know what's going to happen exactly. So that I really like. I like that a lot. There was a movie, and I'm trying to find it. There's a movie called Mustang that came out in 2014, 2015. That was a, I'm trying to remember. It was set, I want to say Spain, but I don't think that's correct. I'm just going to try to see if I can find it so I can mention, because this just reminded me a lot of that one. Come on, internet, you get this bloody. Oh, well, never mind. It was Turkey. It was French. It was a co-production, French, German, Turkey thing. But it's set in Turkey, and it's like this, basically this group of girls and like how they kind of grow up. They're orphans, and they kind of grow up. And then the scandalization and like the societal sort of whatever, and like, well, you have to have arranged marriages because, you know, you were unaccompanied one afternoon, and like, no, fuck that noise. I want to go to school. Like, no, you don't need to be book learning. You're a girl, and like kind of those type of things. And so like how the societal kind of binds, like really kind of create a lot of extra tension. And so that's sort of how I experienced this one. It's like, I kind of just watch that different thing kind of than that way, I guess. But I liked how it wasn't, even though Mustangs is really, really good, and anybody should see it because it's excellent. Plus the fucking music is amazing in that movie. But that one, there's the religious oppression component that's very, very literal. Whereas like in this, it's just sort of more like implied, kind of like that, you know, almost like, you know, like, oh, I can't go talk to those people at this bar. Like, those are the cool people. And it's like, you're in your late 20s. Like, there are no cool people anymore. That's not a thing. And it's like, but inside your system, like, I cannot make one foot go in front of the other and go talk to those people. That's not a thing we're going to do. And it's like, it's internal binding, like, not just external. So anyway, I don't know. That's all kind of how I went through this. And I liked how it was not necessarily the literal religious stuff as much as it is these, like, bindings that kind of cause all this sort of tumult and sort of pain and distress. And I found the whole second half of this very, very uneasy and suspenseful. I'm like, ugh.
Yeah. I guess I was enjoying the first half better. And then, like, I was expecting some kind of escalation, but it seemed to happen real fast and got real uncomfortable real fast. And
yeah,
I don't know, like, there's the whole story about, so girl has an abusive mom, runs away, other little sister follows her, and she accidentally pushes little sister off a cliff. And then leaves her there, presuming her dead and is gone for 15 years. And then when she comes back to town, the girl that she bonds with eventually reveals to be the sister who has arranged this meeting. And we have like the machinations that happened with mom after that happened, and with the village witch, who is really just the old lady who likes the garden, right? All of that story was very interesting. And then it just, I don't know, once we got to going from like yelling at someone to punching them to torturing them to burning their house down in 15 minutes, I was like, holy shit. But then I also felt like that last scene just cuts the thing off at the knees. Like, if it wanted to be more of that Eden Lake kind of thing, it needs to end before that scene of them swimming in the pool happy, right?
Yeah.
And I think if you keep the scene of them swimming in the pool or the pond happy, I need one more scene before that. Because to me, it's might as well say like Poochie died on the way back to his home planet. Like, you missed a whole bunch of stuff to tell us that they would eventually be happy, and that's fine. But when we left them, they were on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Fire. So yeah, as much as it sounds like I have strong feelings about this movie, I kind of don't. Like, that was the other thing. It was like the other movie. Like, what was the other movie we watched? Oh, Night Siren. And I swear to you, for several minutes, I could not think of a single thing about it. I had to go back and look at my Letterboxd review and the Wikipedia article to convince myself that I had watched this movie. And I was like, oh, I remember. Yeah, okay. I remember the secretly gay lady and like all that. And I'm like, okay, sure. But yeah, just kind of passed through and barely ruffled the grass of that grows on my mind and just left me with a like, you know? So it's, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I just think it needs to punch harder or weirder. And then you get somewhere. But yeah, as it is, it's like a 5 out of 10. Like I barely remember watching it even after reading more details. It's like it will not stick in my mind.
Yeah. Yeah, this just, there was, for a second there, I was kind of like, okay, cool. This will be interesting. Like dealing with weird repercussions of accidentally knocking sister off cliff. Oh, we're going to just jump ahead. And it's been, oh, okay. And then it's like, oh, woman comes back to town. She hangs out with this person. And I'm like, well, it's clearly her sister. And then at some point they're like, I'm your sister. And I'm like, was that a twist? Was there a twist here that I thought was just part of what was the story? Like,
I didn't catch on for a while.
I assumed that was just known to everyone except our protagonist as, and like, it just seemed obvious to me, I guess, but maybe that was just me making a connection that wasn't there and then happening to be right just by dumb luck. I don't know, but
that's kind of luck, buddy.
It's the one I got the most of. So like, I just kind of felt unfulfilled for this entire thing. And it was, yeah, this really just tried to slip out of my brain as fast as it possibly could. Like I had to refresh myself on the Wikipedia here. And yeah, it's just, like what little I could remember, I wasn't a fan of, and I was pretty bored. So this is for me like a 2 out of 10. Apparently there is such a thing as too somber of a rural thing.
Too somber. Too somber, too rural. This sequel.
It's just like the action scene is just like a buggy sort of going around a curve.
As a barn is being raised.
While the Amish man driving slowly lowers his head into his hands in disappointment and shame.
Yep.
And somehow Ludacris is there. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, but I think Josh has a very good point, though, that like the thing about this being on Shudder is that it is tricky because you just kind of go like, well, my expectation is that there's going to be a bigger bit, or like in Robert Eggers and then Eggers, you know, The Witch, where it's sort of like not instantaneously, but fairly early on, you're like, oh, the things are afoot and there are more things. There are more severe supernatural things. There's more that, you know. That is the thing, like in The Witch, where it'll dance towards it and then dances away from it, Whereas this kind of has a very, very slow bell curve into like actualizing kind of like the level of, you know, like implied and direct sort of oppression and Stockholm-y thing that like any female who dared be female on the sort of society has got to deal with. And so it's sort of like, you know, but I mean, when we watched that one collection of shorts that one time, my favorite one was the deer. So, you know, sometimes I can just get down with a thing that's very, like, subsumed, as it is, I would say. Like, I like this a lot. I thought it had a great look to it. I love that they didn't crutch into organized religion, which is always seems like that's the direction that a lot of very somber Eastern European things will go. It's just, like, very much in the religion direction. And it's like, kind of a bummer because I feel like it kind of gets played out a bit in that respect, where you're like, okay, and you have the zealot, and then you have the community zealot person, and they're all gonna zealot together. And it's like, oh, well, all right. I really did like that they didn't do that, which is really cool. So, so yeah, I'll be the high man on the totem pole here, but I'm not jumping from the roof deep necessarily. I'll say like 6.5 out of 10, 6.5 out of 10. I mean, I know it's not directly related to it, but I mean, this does feel like if you're going to upend most of your life, you would employ the rule of the double tap just to make sure that you actually killed the girl. Because if you didn't, then, you know, the whole thing goes different. So, I mean, I'm just saying. 10. Or just don't go next to a cliff's edge, for fuck's sake.
There should be at least a sign or something there. Yeah.
It's that bit from Family Guy. Like, I don't want extra vacation times. I don't want the upgraded dental plan. You know what I want? A railing. I just want a railing. My favorite jokes in all of Star Wars films. Like, I love that one. That one and Hang on the Hand, dude, Little Trip. Those are my two favorite jokes out of this film. Family Guy, Star Wars. I love those.
Yeah, you know, the other thing is how quickly it doesn't really matter that she dropped her sister off a cliff and spent 15 years thinking sister was dead.
Yeah.
Like, that is not as a big of a player in the plot as you would expect.
Yeah. And
yeah, there's less consequence to that part of it as much as it's like internal punishment, really.
I mean, it's just...
But dude, I didn't even get that from her. Like, she... I don't know.
No, it seems like very much just like we need a plot device to create the rest of this movie.
Like, she seemed to be getting along okay.
Yeah. Like, we're not going to say what she did. We're not going to say if that affected her. We're not going to say how coming back affects her much. Like, I don't know.
Look, don't push your sister off a bridge just or a cliff or anything, really.
Yeah.
Just don't do it.
Don't push people off stuff. Yeah. Not cool, man. Not cool.
If somebody offers you...
It's a killer.
If somebody offers you gravity, you just say no.
Yeah, exactly. Swing off into space.
Yeah. Let's talk about then, at long last, the birthday, or el cumpleaños. As I said in other channels, Corey Feldman is Crispin Glover as Seymour Krelborn in a movie directed by David Lynch and written by Tommy Wiseau.
And see, I said it's like someone made Terry Gilliam make a version of Mother with a script consisting of Twin Peaks fanfic translated by AI.
That kind of works too. I think what we're saying is in this movie, nobody talks like people.
Nope.
And it's not just like the things, like the phrases are off. It is just the things that they say. Like if I just walked up to someone and said, "Are you wearing your socks today?" That would be weird. And they would be off put, right? Or if I walked up to someone and said, "You know, your mother has a 12-pound labia." Like, that's what's happening in this movie. Just so we have our, like, every dink character who Corey Feldman is playing with the boldest choices. It's impossible to hate. It's great. But he is just kind of stumbling through this milieu. Like, it's like if you put the Big Lebowski in Barton Fink.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And he'll just like wander around and go, "Oh, okay. And like people hand him things and he just carries them around for a while and he's like, "Shit," and sets it down. And never at any point really does he know what's going on or what to do next. And like, if I'm making this sound like darkly funny, then I'm not getting across how weirdly and poorly made this is. Because it really, the dialogue especially, is I couldn't tell if it was that Coen Brothers, like, you know, "Are you interested in sex, Mr. Lebowski, coitus?" You know, like that kind of not talking like people, or "Oh, hi, Mark," kind of talking, like not talking like people. Like, is this really good or really inept? And I could not tell. So it's just, God, this movie's so fucking weird.
Well, and it's, I think part of it, and I wonder, and I don't, by no means am I going to be snide at all. I don't want it to sound like that. But I do wonder to some degree about the, because this is a Spanish movie. Mm-hmm. And I wonder from a translation standpoint if that has anything to do with that. I've wondered that since I saw, because this is that Fantastic Fest, that's a big thing that they did for this.
Like, I've been wondering that since then. If I didn't know that Corey Feldman speaks fluent English, I'd be like, did they learn the script phonetically? Did they write it with Google Translate? Like, okay, so what happened?
Well, that's kind of what I mean. Like, it's sort of like, I don't know. Like, but it's just sort of like, I wonder how much that can affect things. Because we've certainly seen things that have been like Belgian or French or Spanish, where Brazilian, where we've seen ones where they're like, "Yeah, I know you're speaking the English, but I mean, it's like kind of an adjacent English, sort of." And that's not meant to be a slight. It's more just sort of like you notice it the same way that somebody, you know, where if, you know, somebody, a filmmaker in Korea is going to see somebody like translated an American script into Korean and go like, I mean, I guess that's, but I mean, you just, you know, you just call that coffee table a hippopotamus. Like, that doesn't make any sense. So like, there's that, I always wonder about that part of it. And then like the other thing with this one is just like the one that makes me think of, and I'll watch this through a second time, is it makes me think of some of the parts of Four Rooms where like, I think Four Rooms is great. Four Rooms is a lot of fun.
I love that movie. Yeah.
It's entertaining as shit. But there are large parts of that movie where you're just like, what the shit is going on? Like, it's not like it's being ambiguous to the point of being confusion or surrealist. And you're just like, what is happening? But Barton Fink, Joshua, that is the one, like, that is the one above all. Because once he slaps the fly on in Barton Fink, from that point forward, nothing makes sense. Like, absolutely. Everything's very literal. And then once the fly slap, and then it's just nothing makes a lick of fucking sense. To the end of the movie, like people just say things that make no sense. They act in ways that are nonsensical, and just like blah, 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 to the end of it. And like this kind of feels like the fly slap, but like about 10 minutes in the movie, it's like fly slap, and then it's just nonsense forever. And like they keep presenting things like, oh well, there's the thing, and then they're working on this. There's a drug thing, and there's whatever else, and it's like, okay, well, sure. But ultimately, what you just have is you have like, it's almost as if like you're gonna do a presentation of Noises Off or the play that goes wrong. But everybody got the script in a different language, and then they translated all the different scripts back into one language they're going to perform it in. So, like, everybody's acting from a different – it's the same script, but they're all acting from a different translation of it. And, like, and that makes everything seem off. Like, Girlfriend Lady is just unbelievably ridiculously shrill for no fucking reason. And, like, then, like, Dad. And then, like, Uncle, it's like Johnny Knoxville is – what's his nuts from the Conjuring movies? Patrick Wilson. It's like Patrick Wilson, Johnny Knoxville looking guy. He slinks around from place to place. Then you have all the pillow worker thing. The guy that he went to high school with. All these people kind of come in and out of the lady with the kind of curly hair, the kind of like saucy lady at the bar. You have all these different people that kind of come in and out of this thing, just behaving and acting and saying things. And then they're just all kind of passing by each other in this thing. So there's a plot, I guess, but it's kind of just sort of like, watching this sort of weirdness sort of build on itself. And it's like, if you're on board with it, then it's like, it's very fun and entertaining. And if you can't find that fun and entertaining, then it's like an interminable thing. Mm. it's like, I don't think there's a middle ground.
I was irritated for most of it.
That's perfectly said.
Like a little bit just like, Jesus Christ, what is this thing? And then like, oh, that was pretty funny. I do like, so we have the improbable girlfriend has the like super rich family, like family of rich weirdos, like society level rich weirdo family. And yet at the end of it, it wasn't them at all. It was the entire wait staff that was summoning the elder god into uncle whatever, and then to daughter, who's Corey Feldman's girlfriend. Like, the rich weirdos were just rich weirdos. They weren't worshiping Satan or anything. It was just everybody on their wait staff who had the weird little tattoo. It's surreal for sure. I just kind of wanted it to not be that hard to watch. Like, I wanted it to not be less weird, maybe, but to be a little more purposeful in its weirdness, I guess. It's hard to nail down, but it's just something was not jiving with me for this thing. And it just, I couldn't tell if it was a bad movie that was like funny bad or a serious movie that was accidentally funny or if I'm a psychopath who thought angst was a black comedy. So yeah, I think it is just a vibe thing. And I think honestly, if this were in French, I would have bought it. If you package this, like dubbed it in French and said, this is, you know, Jean-Pierre Jeunet's latest movie, then that might fit. Like, maybe that's what it is that like the European sensibility kind of colliding with American filmmaking, and you end up with like something that wants to be just delicatessen or City of Lost Children levels of strange, but it the dialogue, when you can hear it in your native language, just doesn't track as well.
I did think of those movies as I was watching this, Delicatessen and City of Lost Children, going like, you're trying to do this weirdo thing and you're not getting whatever is it is that makes those things also work. But like, I don't know that I had paid attention to the fact that it was a Spanish production, which then does kind of make that make more sense. So yeah, I mean, it still doesn't work, but the reason for the attempt is less flawed to me, I guess, based on that information. But cause yeah, this is sort of just like a, I can't say, you know, with certainty that it's weird for weirdness sake, but I do think this is meant to just be, to give you a sense that anything could happen here and nothing is necessarily what it seems. And like, sometimes you can have a big point behind all that. And sometimes that can just be kind of the point itself. This seemed to me very aimless and bizarre, and who knows, maybe that's something that's lost in translation, or maybe that's just something that's lost on me. But yeah, I don't, it's such a weird beast.
And I think also part of it is it cuts at the point where you might have like a big squishy society ending.
Right.
Probably for budget reasons, but it is just like, oh, they're going to summon the thing. The thing's getting summoned. He's going to hit his girlfriend with an axe and then just to black. Like, yeah. Oh man, he doesn't like whack her head off and then she stands up and there's tentacles coming out of her neck. And like, no. So like, we don't get that, and I think that does keep it from feeling like it's one of those types of movies.
Well, and you have to wonder too how much of this you have to say, or at least I feel like there's a good chance that part of why this doesn't work is that regardless of the quality of his performance, Corey Feldman is still Corey Feldman and all the baggage that that comes with. Whereas were this an unknown guy or like, you know, a French dude I'd never heard of, like, would I be much more willing to invest in a quirky performance like that? Like Tim Roth works that into Four Rooms very well. He became one of my favorite actors after that. But the seeing Corey Feldman do weird, I don't know, maybe my brain's just not ready for that and to take it on its own terms.
Yeah, and you just go, well, why are you talking like that? Yeah. You don't talk like that. Like it. That's why the Crispin Glover thing kept sticking with me, because he's doing a weird voice and he's doing big choices with his body. Yeah. And it reminded me of like Crispin Glover in Charlie's Angels.
Right.
There's weird stuff. Yeah. Sometimes I just... Yeah, sometimes you don't have enough words to express. I am not sorry that I watched it, and I would tell people, like, give it 10 minutes and see if you can vibe with it, because it is just so bizarre. But then it's that Roger Ebert thing, like, it kind of... It has to be seen to be believed, but that might be too high a price to pay.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. The last thing I said in Letterboxd, and I think I'd stand by it, is this could be a lovely, like, Masters of Horror episode or Twilight Zone episode if you cut a full hour out of it. Because I think that's about how much movie there is, or how much time I want to spend in this environment. So I think like the sub 60 minute cut of this would be a whole lot more fun. So I don't know. It's hard to rate it because it feels like that's not what it's made for. But I would say like 3 out of 10. Suddenly Seymour's, because what the fuck?
The 2. This is not fun to watch.
This was not your week.
No. Like, The Monkey was great. Like, I think I enjoyed that a great deal. And so that was all right. I was watching a bunch of other stuff, so I was okay. But yeah, these two were just like, the last two here were just kind of like me sitting there going, am I broken? I finally, did I hit the like 3000 movie mark and now I'm just like numb and I will never enjoy anything again? Like, I don't know. But yeah, this was a bummer. Sometimes I like weird. This weird didn't do it for me. Yeah,
it's, for all the reasons. It ends up more dark backward than.
Yes. Yeah.
Like Barton Fink, where it's just like, I don't know what's going on and I just feel kind of dirty.
Yep.
Well, and I think, you know, the other thing too, and I would definitely say this is probably a factor, which is sometimes the environment or the circumstances can definitely color a thing. Like the astrologer or whatever it was, the crazy thing.
Oh yeah, you've talked about that
years
before,
ago.
Yeah.
Where, like, it's just, that was one of my, probably one of my top 10 favorite movie theater experiences like ever. It's a garbage movie, but it was like, it was so fun. It was so much fun of like being in this audience of like all these people going like, what in the hell are we watching? This is nuts. It's getting nutser. And it's like, and it's just like, and you're just like, and you're just on for the ride. And it's just like, there's a thing with that, that like, it's not fair to anybody else. Like, it's sort of like the same thing with Tokyo Tribe, like seeing the world premiere of Tokyo Tribe and being like, oh my God, like Jesus H. Christ, this is incredible. What a feeling this is to like want to be in this room and do this kind of stuff. And like, I recognize that this, like, that the translation of that is tricky. Mm-hmm. And so like with this one, I mean, coming out of this was not the feeling like Tokyo Tribe, because Tokyo Tribe is a legitimately awesome movie. And it's like, so it wasn't like that. And it wasn't like the astrologer or astronomer with that one, where like you walk out just going, wow, we just, that was an experience. But it was kind of in that category of being like, are you seeing what I'm seeing? Like, this is, well, let's see how this goes. Like, what? That kind of thing for like however long it goes. And so there was a kind of like a, not an Emperor's New Clothes feel to it, but it's sort of more like a, like we're all just sort of in this room that we can't escape this nonsense. Let's just see where it goes. And I think that there was a coloring component for me, because watching this for the second time, I was reminded of like what that feeling was like of being like in this room watching this nonsense thing that was just sort of, you know, off of the radar of really anybody, if you weren't Guillermo del Toro, Jordan Peele, for 20 years. And then like all of a sudden they're like, oh, here's this thing. Like, huh, well, wasn't that a bit of a thing? So I think that's part of it. You know, like I just, you know, and so it's like the difference between like describing an amusement park ride and like being on it, I guess would be the way I would say. So like I still get a lot out of this. I enjoy the gigantic swings that they're taking with this just nonsensical thing that I think, Josh, I think you said it perfectly. Like, if this was a Masters of Horror length of thing, I bet you it hits in a much better way, mm-hmm. In general terms, you know. As it stands, like I said, I just have this the unfair thing of like the other experience of watching this nonsense. So you know, I'll be a lot higher on this because I had that experience. I can't erase that. So just by virtue of that alone, I would say 6.5. I'd say 6.5 out of 10. 6.5 out of 10. So much slate gray fondant that little floofy ass grocery store sheet cake. It's not going to be able to hold that fucker up. Like, no matter what you're going to do. Like, it's just going to go.
The real villain is whoever decided to make something as delicious as cake gross.
Right. I mean, like, gray fondant. Like, why? It's dusty. It looks weird. It looks dirty. Feels like it's going to just taste like printer ink. Like, no, it's no good. Out of 10.
Delicious. All right, we'll take a quick break and then talk about the things we're going to watch next. So next up, we're gonna watch *Starve Acre* that just hit Shudder and has Matt Smith in it, and we've been excited about it for a while. We're gonna watch *Property*. It's a 2022 Spanish film. Looks pretty cool. We're gonna check out. We're gonna finally talk about *Heretic* because we just all kind of saw it in between shows, and so we're gonna officially acknowledge Heretic, and I will watch it again, and I'm sure we all will, just to make sure that we come correct on it. Two things to note before I observe that I've been Josh. First, we are making a whole ass film festival that's happening. You can find it at mngenrefilmexpo.com or at Horror Show Hot Dog. We'll link you to that URL. That is going to be taking place in October. If you know any filmmakers or you are any filmmakers, you can submit a film and we might put it in our show. And secondly, Novocaine is great.
Yeah, it's good fun.
Very, very fun. If you haven't seen Hard Eyes, see that first, but then Novocaine will it'll be a beautiful palate cleanser. Just Jack Quaid needs to be in all the things.
Both perfect eight-night movies.
Exactly. For the right girl. And honestly,
I was just going to say, yeah.
If that's not your girl, then I don't know. maybe you have something to think about. But I've been Josh this entire time, and I will say bye.
Next week, the short will be Shut the Door at 10:04. Yeah, that'll be the short, which you can find at horrorshowhotdog.com, along with information about our Minnesota Genre Film Exposition. And yeah, as far as you all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
When you said it being the right girl thing, I can't help but leave you this, that when Warm Bodies came out, which is a movie I really like, I think, you know, Nick Holt and Tracy Palmer great, and I really, and then of course Rob Corddry is in this.
Yeah.
Eat. and like, I really enjoy it. I think it's fun. I think it's charming. I really enjoy it. But Kristen and I hadn't been seeing each other all that long, and I took her to go see that. And she, because we went to Alamo, as you normally would, she got a steak salad. And there's a scene about a third of the way, halfway through the movie, where he's eating brains out of a little baggie in his pocket. Mm-hmm. And she just kind of slides her salad away from her. And we're still together now. So, like, you know, sometimes that's a good bellwether for, like, you know, either somebody's tolerance level or that you've looked into something good. So either which way you want to slice it, it's sort of, I have a warm spot in my heart for Warm Bodies forever for that reason. Mm-hmm. All right, you all take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and then we'll talk to you very, very soon. Take care. Bye bye now.
Quintanilla. My favorite thing about the Spanish language is that año means year and ano means anus.
Oh my.
So if you take the tilde off the N, you turn year into anus.
Wow.
Cracks me up every time they use it on like a crossword or something.
So either like we've somehow not stumbled on that landmine at work, or my Ecuadorians are very polite.
I mean, if you know what they mean, you know, if you say like, happy new asshole, and they're like, we understand. But I mean, this is a feature
that
of our
laugh
language.
That Charlie just gave when you said that is the laugh that all humans should make if someone says it that way, and they have not laughed at me like that yet. And Miriam had a birthday last month, so I don't know, man. Or maybe they were happy. Oh, shit. No, okay.
That was a funny... Well, some of the pronunciations, too, like, there's that show a couple years ago on Netflix, that's a series... excellent series called The Bodyguard. It was like this guy who was like assigned to the, not the prime minister, but like the some up and up in the British government, and then like they kind of have this affair or whatever else. But American audiences were having some difficulty because once they started becoming like sexually involved, he says mum. Which is the way that they say ma'am, and that's how you address anybody of authority and police and other kind of stuff. And it's like, and so it was weirding people out that he was calling her mum, like as in like mom. Like, well, mom, ma'am, but it's just a shortened version. And I'm sort of like, and I just think that's hilarious. This is like, because I watched a lot of the British crime ones. I love Vera very much with Brenda Bledel. Oh, God bless her. She's so great. But they all call her mom as well. And it's like, every once in a while, I go, that's absolutely.
So along those lines, I was watching a movie and I asked the Discord if anyone else had ever heard the term dick diaper instead of condom. Because it was in a movie I saw, and I was like, have I been living under a rock or what? And it was like, that's pretty gross. And I'm like, yeah, it'd be pretty tough to get laid. Like, can you imagine being like, hold on a second, baby. Daddy's got to get a dick diaper for you. And I realized once I had typed it, there's no inflection. So they all read it as, hold on, baby. Daddy's got to get a dick diaper for you.
Oh, dear.
And everybody went, oh, God. Oh, God, no. And I went, oh, it works on two levels.
Like, that went slightly different than I intended.
Wrong on so many levels.
So, yeah, inflection. This is key.